Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Dan Lynch joins me. We're going to do a show about audio processing, a brand new free service called Auphonic.com. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Dan Lynch. Episode 240, recorded January 30th, 2013. Auphonic. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, libre, open-source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at StoneAge.com, bringing you each week the big projects, the little projects, projects you may not have heard of, like maybe today's project, the movers, the shakers, the exciting stuff, the not-so-exciting stuff. Well, why would we do that? Do we only bring you exciting stuff? Let's just scratch that. We'll just bring you exciting stuff, and that's it. Okay, very good. As usual, I am joined by a co-host this week is none other than Dan Lynch. Dan, welcome back to the show.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
And Dan, we have a really exciting show today. Not that we only have all exciting shows. What am I talking about? We have a really interesting show though today. And I selected you in particular as a co-host for this. And we chatted about why, but this show today is about audio. It's about audio engineering. In particular, the work that it takes to transform a given piece of audio into something that's nice to listen to. And we're going to talk to Georg Holtzman, who is the lead of a project called Auphonic.com, which is a website as a service. Have you heard anything about this, Dan?
To be honest, I hadn't heard about it at all before this show. So I'm really glad that I have found out about it because I am a big audio geek, as you can probably make out. I'm in the studio. You can't see very well, but I'm in my recording studio. But there's a guitar behind me and some microphones and stuff going on. So I just can't wait to talk about about audio and audio geekery and of course open source.
Yes. Yeah, so basically what Auphonic.com does is providing a service. And I actually signed up for this service just last night and uploaded a couple of audio files this morning. So basically you take an audio file that might have high levels and low levels in it, or maybe there's some noise in the background or whatever, and you want to make it sound good, like you're going to put it into a podcast or something. So what you do is you upload this, and within seconds, it had taken my audio file and downloaded it back to my Dropbox and said, here you go. And I listened to the resulting file, and it was a whole lot better. It was actually nicely leveled, and some of the background hum in the room was taken out and all sorts of stuff. So unlike most of our shows, and I'm sure a few people are probably going to get upset at this, this is not so much an open source show in the sense that this is a project where you can come contribute to it and you get back value from that. Instead, we're going to actually look at using open source to create something that's really, really cool. And also, you know, it's a free service for now. I really don't know their business model yet. Are they going to make it up in volume by having like millions of uploads? No, I have no idea how they're going to make money on it. We'll have to ask them what's going on about that. But for now, it's a free service. So you can use it and automatically download your files to Dropbox or up to Libsyn, which a lot of people use that I talk to. Or up to S3 or whatever. So, and all the formats, open source formats too. So people who are yelling at me for not having like a AUG version of this show, we could actually maybe do a pipeline that outloads the files to this and makes a little stream for it. Maybe I can talk to the guys at the Brick House about this. Anyway, enough ado about that. Anything before we start going, Dan?
No, let's get into it. I can't wait.
So let's go ahead and bring on our guest, Georg Holtzman. Hope I'm pronouncing that right. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Randall. Hello, Dan.
Very good. Very good. Hey, where are you speaking to us from?
I'm speaking from Austria. That's south of Germany, and it's between Italy, Germany, Slovenia. And I am in the south part of Austria, so we have lots of snow outside, and it's quite cold, unfortunately.
Very good. And that's not the place with the kangaroos. That's the other one.
Okay. Yeah, that's the other continent.
Had to make that joke once, at least in this show. Okay, there we go. Well, great. So at the beginning of the show, I'm pretty excited about this, actually. I've been playing with Auphonic. Auphonic, we'll have to get you to pronounce it for us. Only like about 12 hours, because I only have very limited time to prepare for the show. But I've already processed a couple of audio files through it. So I think I have a kind of a sense of how it works and all that sort of stuff. But and I gave sort of an overview of that at the beginning of the show. But why don't you go ahead and give us like the 30,000-foot view of what we've got going on here?
Okay, I will try. So our general vision is to make producing audio as easy as writing blogs is now. So for instance, if you do some audio recordings, you have to know how to record it. You have to know how to adjust compressors and how to host it somewhere online to distribute it to your audience. And yeah, we just thought we want to automate this. And at the moment, we are focusing on all the audio processing stuff. So basically, you just record a file, your show. You can also do it with our free and open source online app, mobile app. And then you upload it to our servers. Then we analyze this file and see where is music or where are different speakers and where are different background scenes and whatever is in there. And then we just process the loudness so that all speakers have similar loudness or that music and speech has similar loudness. And also, if there is some background noise, we identify different background noise profiles and remove them. Or if there is a power line hum or other things, and we filter it a little bit so that you can hear it quite good. And then if it's ready, we do metadata, so you can put in all your metadata and chapter marks and everything you need, especially for podcasts. And afterwards, you can say, okay, let's copy this to my server or to my Dropbox, or to YouTube, or to SoundCloud, or to Libsyn, whatever. Archive.org is also a good place. And yeah, then you can say your listeners that they can take the file and they can listen to it.
So just to kind of bring people up, I'm sure most people are familiar with a blog in the sense that you would go to someplace like, say, WordPress or Blogger or whatever's out there these days to do that sort of thing. And you would post an article, and then you'd come along maybe the next day or the next week and post another article and then comments and responses are back. I don't think most people understand the mechanisms of a podcast and how similar that is actually to a blog. Can you explain some more about how that works?
Yeah, podcasting is much too complicated. So at first you have to know how to record the audio. And as I said, you have to know how to set compressors and limiters and lots of complicated stuff. And if you finish that, then you have to publish it somewhere. And so this means you have to have a web space where you can put lots of audio files. Maybe if you have a big podcast, then you have lots of requests at a specific time. And then you need a feed where podcatchers can subscribe to, and also a website where you present your podcast. So it's really a complex task to find all the building blocks and build them together.
Yeah, as a starting podcaster, I was really amazed to find something like Libsyn, where I could, for a small fee, and actually reasonable fee, upload, I don't know, I guess it was something like 4 hours of audio in 1 month. And that was plenty, you know, and somehow they allow unlimited downloads, which I couldn't figure out because I can't figure out the business model for that. But but it was nice also because it provided a web space for me so I could have like show notes and places for comments, which all became spam later, which is really kind of pointless. I turned all the commenting off. But it was kind of nice to find that. So, but you're right. The biggest problem isn't necessarily finding a place to host everything, because there's plenty of places to do that as well. It's this whole notion of audio production in the front end. I know that I've had a lot of practice at tweaking knobs and trying to get things level and stuff. Can we talk some more about the problems of getting good audio and what kind of processing you have to do to it?
Yeah, of course. So one point is, of course, one important point is, of course, the loudness. So if you record a podcast with, let's say, us two, so you have an interviewer and someone is interviewed, and it might be that they have different loudness, or for example, if you record a lecture, then there are always questions from the audience which are much more quiet, and so you must somehow adjust the loudness. And that's maybe easy for speech, but if you then have also music, it's not so easy anymore, because with music you must do it completely different, because if you do it like with speech, then you will destroy all the dynamics in the music and it will sound totally stupid. So that's one important part of our system. So we first classify the audio which is uploaded to our servers. So where are music parts and where are different speakers, and how do we have to adjust the loudness so that they are somehow perceived on a similar level? And this is the next important point, because until recently, there was no established standard how you measure loudness of audio. And only in the last 2 years, I think it was, a new audio standard was introduced. It was first called EBUR 128. And at least all the European broadcast stations already implemented this standard, or many of them. So this means there is now one easy method, and this is an open method. So it's not a patented algorithm or whatever. So everyone can take this algorithm and measure the loudness of an audio. And then you can also say, okay, I want to have the audio at this loudness level, which is also very important. Because, for example, you maybe remember it from commercials. They're always much louder than the rest of the TV program, for example. Mm-hmm. And now, at least in Europe, that's forbidden. So you have to have a uniform loudness across all programs. And yeah, that's, of course, also an important part in our system.
You know, and I noticed that, and that really irks me about some podcasts I listen to, where I often listen to podcasts in the car as I'm driving around, and I have it fed out of my iPhone, is playing it back, and I also have on my iPhone my GPS. So I have a GPS voice that interrupts from time to time to tell me turn left or turn right. And there are some podcasts that are so quiet that I have to crank it way up to make it so I can hear it. Then all of a sudden, turn left at the next intersection. Whoa, 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 whoa. You know, so it's so with something like Alphonic, I can make sure that they're all processed to the same relative output level then, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly the problem. But it's still not so easy as you might think, because there are different target loudness levels for this different distribution channels. For instance, there is an established standard for TV in US and in Europe. It's quite similar. But all the internet audio and mobile audio is, of course, much louder, because they want to be heard on mobile devices where you go around in underground, for example, or somewhere outside. And yeah, so there is still a fight about this target loudness level. And yeah, let's see how this will develop. But also, the important part is not only this target loudness level, which is just one level for one file. The important part is also that the different parts in one file are on a similar loudness, because it doesn't matter if you have the correct target loudness, but one speaker is very loud and one speaker is very quiet, then you won't understand the second one.
Wow. So one of the other things that you mentioned earlier, I just want to make sure that we highlight, is that you can't apply the same leveling to speech and music. And part of that is that speech in general, if I understand this right, maybe you can help me understand it as well, that speech, we kind of all want it to be at the same level, the same sort of relative loudness, because we are picking apart the words in there. But music, one component of the music is that it is dynamic. It gets louder and softer as in different parts of the music. How do you detect the difference between speech and music, and how does that affect your algorithms?
We detect the difference with a classifier. So if you upload the audio, we will extract lots of features and descriptions from the audio. So where are the frequencies and where are the rhythms and stuff like that. And these features go into a classifier, and then this will be trained with all the audio data which are on our servers. And the classifier gives decisions, okay, this is its music and this is speech and this is different background scenario, this is recorded outside and things like that. And yeah, the good thing in the system is also that we, of course, learn from the audio data which is uploaded to our servers, so it will improve itself all the time.
Okay, now, I know a few of my audience members are already screaming, well, this sounds like a really interesting service, but what's the open source component to this? So we better get into that pretty early in the show. So how is this impacted by open source, and how do you relate to the open source community?
Of course. So our system is built totally with open source components. So we are, of course, based on Linux, and all the web server is... So our main programming language, maybe let's get a little bit more technical. Our main programming language is Python, and we use it for web development and also for audio algorithms and machine learning. And maybe we can get into the packages later. And we, of course, also contribute our development back to the community wherever possible. And we are also are rooted in the Linux audio community, and we are just now working on a set of plugins with some algorithms, and this will be released soon.
Cool. So I'm sorry, I want to cut in there. I know Randall won't be as pleased, but I'm pleased to hear that you're using Python. That's brilliant. But I'm curious to know how are you actually processing audio? Because at first, when I heard about the service, I went and had a look, and I wondered if maybe you're using something like Sox, which is a command line audio tool that you can use on Unix and Linux and various types of Unix. But are you doing the processing through the Python then? You're not farming it out to, say, a terminal, a bash kind of command, and pulling it back in?
Yeah, it's a combination of both. So we also use FFmpeg, for example, to read files, to read video and audio files. And then we load the decoded audio into Python. And there we use NumPy and SciPy. These are, it's called numerical Python. These are computing packages for Python, which are very fast. So because they are similar, like, for instance, if somebody knows it, MATLAB. It's also a computing package, which is very popular for similar things. And there you always process files in arrays. So you always take a bigger buffer of audio and process it with NumPy. And the algorithm inside NumPy, they are very much optimized in Fortran and in C. And so everything is very fast, but you can use the high-level features of Python. And there are also many packages for Python for machine learning and signal processing. So this is really a great environment. And yeah, we also made some bindings to the Linux audio software components. For instance, there are plugin standards in Linux, like the LV2 plugins. This is the latest audio plugin standard. And yeah, we also made bindings for NumPy to LV2, which will also be released soon. And yeah, then you can also use all the Linux audio plugins directly in Python.
Excellent. So that makes me wonder. So on the phone, on the mobile app, I'm assuming it doesn't do all the processing on the phone. Does it use the web service to process the audio? So you're just uploading it through the phone? Because I imagine trying to use all those tools on your phone may be difficult.
Yeah, of course. The audio processing is not on the phone, it's just on our servers. So if you use it on the phone, it will just upload the audio to our servers and then process it there. So we have a programming interface, an API, and the mobile app is just an interface to our API. So you can include our algorithms and services in every program you want.
Excellent. So there's an artificial intelligence element to this as well, because you were saying that the program, the more you use it, the more input you give it, the better that it kind of learns. And you're using machine learning model for that and so on. So how does all that kind of work?
Yeah, exactly. So as I already said, the example with the music and speaker detection, this is also a classifier. And then we have various classifiers, for example, for noise profiles to find different regions in an audio file where there are different noise profiles. For instance, if you record now and then you go outside, then outside there is a different kind of noise in the background. So you somehow have to detect this, and then you have to check, okay, because if you want to make noise reduction, for example, you have to take noise prints. These are small parts where there is only noise. So you have to check, okay, where is nobody speaking, and detect it and take the noise from there and then make the noise reduction with these settings. Or, for example, if you have a power line hum, that's also very common with podcasters, then you have to detect, is there a power line hum and how many harmonics and partial does it include, and filter out all these unwanted frequencies.
It sounds really, really cool. And as an audio geek myself, I love talking about noise profiles and algorithms and all that kind of stuff. I was just curious though, because I said to Randall before, I seem to spend half my life editing podcasts, so this could be a real lifesaver for me, literally, possibly. But you know, it seems like something that takes a long time. But I'm quite specific about the way that I like to kind of edit things and process them. Is there any way I could kind of set my own standards? So you've got your classifiers and things. Could I say, oh, I want my music to be at this level and my speech to be at this level and tell it in some way? Is that something we could look at in future, like maybe a template or a profile or something?
Of course. At the moment, we just define it in our standard settings, but that's just a question of giving the parameter to the outside. So we will, of course, do it. But it's always, you know, it's always very difficult to define an interface which is easy for podcasters who have not much background in audio processing and for expert users. So that's always very difficult. But we will try to make, to give more parameters to the outside in future. Yes, of course.
So, yeah, I suppose it's partly a question of target audience and so on. So somebody who is an audio engineer, you know, may want a higher level of control. But as you say, there are lots of people out there who just want their audio to sound good and they don't want to spend 3 hours, you know, learning how to do it and so on. Presumably I could do this this kind of process that you're going through. I can do all this stuff. I could do this stuff if I had the time and the inclination myself. Or is there any extra kind of special bits that you've written in there, any kind of secret sauce, as Randall calls it?
What do you mean exactly now?
The processing, the way you're going through the process, and I could do it manually myself. Obviously, it's time-consuming, but there's no special secrets in there or anything extra.
No, we just want to model how a usual audio engineer would do it. So you just look into the audio and see what you have to fix, how to adjust volumes and how to set compressors and limiters and how to extract noise profiles and everything like that and filtering. So there is nothing special or secret. It's just the automated process, which is our system.
Mm. And one of the really cool things about this is that you can output into, I think it's like 7 or so different formats, which is really good, because I've seen other kind of services online, and a lot of them only do MP3, which is the most common for podcasts, obviously. But sometimes people will want, you know, OGG or WAVE or FLAC or whatever it might be. So can you tell us a bit about all the formats you support and how that links in?
Of course, it's a very important part. So we are basically developing much in combination with the German podcast community, and they really use a lot of file formats. So most of them, of course, MP3, just as a fallback for all devices. So MP3 is a very good format, but of course it's not as efficient as newer formats. But the big advantage of MP3 is that every old and new player can play it. And yeah, there are other formats like AAC or MP4. Well, MP4 is just a container and AAC is the audio codec which is inside the MP4 container most of the time. And this is a very popular format on all the iDevices like iPhone and also on Android. And it's a much newer codec and it's also much more efficient. So you can really take low bit rates and it still sounds good. And now the latest development is, of course, the Opus codec, which is totally open source and not patented, which is built by XIF. This is the platform which also built the OGG Vorbis codec. It's just the next iteration in this kind of codecs. And it's also a combination of the codec from SCIF and from Skype, the Silk codec. So actually, there are two codecs, the Silk codec, which is a specific speech codec, and the Zell codec, which is a general audio codec. And so you can switch between these two codecs, which are speech-specific and music-specific. And this really gives very low bit rates and still a very good quality. So this is really the thing to go. And it's also part of the new web standards like WebRTC or Web Audio API. No, I don't think so. It doesn't have to do with it. But however, so you can just activate all the file formats you want in our system. Of course, also OGG Vorbis. And yeah, then we handle the metadata and chapter marks for all of these formats. This is also a big point in the German community, if you're interested in it. So they all use chapter marks. This is very, very good, especially for long podcasts. So this means you can say specific time points and titles, and then you see it in your podcatchers on Android or on the iPhone. And You can jump to the times and see the topics and don't have to listen through all of the podcast. And yeah, there was previously the chapter marks were only possible with MP4 files. Mm. And yeah, now there is also a standard for Vorbis comments, which is for OGVorbis and Opus and FLAC and everything. And for MP3 files, there is also already a very old standard, but nobody used it. And yeah, we re-implemented it now. And the library is also open source, where we contributed it. And now there are already many podcatchers which support these MP3 chapter marks. And this is really nice because you can make an MP3 format, which is compatible with all old devices, and still add chapter marks to it. So you have two things in one very old file format, which is very nice, I think.
Mm. Yeah, that is really, really cool. And I didn't realize they were so popular in Germany, more so than maybe other parts of the world, the chapter marks. That's really interesting to hear. So once you've gone through this process, you can then, the service will output to various different places. We mentioned LibSyn, which is a very popular content delivery network, which a lot of podcasters use. But you can output to a lot of other places as well, can't you? Can you use almost any web share with SSH or FTP access and upload to that?
Yes, basically, of course, we support FTP and SFTP. So most of our users just upload to their own server. So if they host their podcast on their own server, they just put the files there via SFTP or FTP. And then the files are already there. So you only have to upload the audio once to us, and then we will distribute it to other servers. And yeah, then you can also use Dropbox or YouTube, for example. If you have an audio-only file, we will generate an image for YouTube and a video. So you can upload a cover image and then we generate a video for it. So you can automatically distribute it to YouTube, also to SoundCloud and Libsyn and archive.org and also Amazon S3. Mm-hmm. And I think that's it for now. But maybe we will add more in the future.
Yeah. Well, that sounds amazing. And what about tagging and so on, ID3 tagging and all that? I know the system kind of does that for you. So you can specify what exact tags you want through, say, the web interface or something. So a lot of people are very, very fussy about what ID3 tags they want specifically on their files.
Exactly. You can make everything in the web interface. And the key thing is also that we don't only do ID3 tags for MP3, for example, but we also do the correct tagging in OGVorbis or in Opus or in MP4 files. So this is all done in one step. And you can also save all your settings in presets. So you just put it in once. And if you have a new show, you just take the preset and just adjust the title, for example. And yeah, that's it.
Yeah, I know. Like when I was experimenting before the show here, and I was just trying to see how simple or how long it would take to process a file. So I created a preset first called Mono ALAC, which is a output audio format, Apple lossless, to Dropbox. And so, of course, I had to give it my Dropbox credentials, and I had to set it up. And I grabbed my iPhone, which I had already downloaded the Auphonic application. And I just recorded a little thing, and I said, oh, chapter marks. So I was able to put chapter marks in, which was kind of funny. I recorded a little 30-second, maybe about a minute blip. And I just barely pushed the send button. I'm on a pretty fast network here, so it's sent pretty fast. But then I saw this little banner pop up, and it said, processing audio, you know, analyzing or whatever, analyzing, processing, delivering to your Dropbox. It was like 5 seconds later. I don't know how you do that. I was expecting to be in some queue behind 100 other people and all that stuff. How does that work?
Well, this will just be processed on our servers, and when it's finished, it's delivered to your Dropbox. So, I mean,
yeah. What kind of?
I guess your audio was not very long, so
no. It wasn't. It was just 30 seconds. But it was really cool because then all of a sudden I got my Dropbox notification on my laptop and I said, oh, there's the file. Then I played it back and it sounded really nice. Actually, for being an audio recording on my iPhone, it sounded really great. It sounded almost good enough to use in a podcast or something, which is really cool. Actually, you know, the iPhone 4 and 4S and 5 all have really great mics. So I've actually done dictating using those and dropped them into a podcast before. So what's the hardware behind this? Are you using EC2? Or you got just a dedicated machines or what?
No, we have root servers, dedicated machines. So there is no Amazon or whatever. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we just have an internal DAS queue, which is, maybe let's get a little bit more technical again, which is also, of course, done in Python. And there is a celery DAS queue. By the way, for the web service, we use Django.
Django,
for the, for the web system, we use mm-hmm. Django. Mm-hmm. And all the audio processing is done in a DAS queue. And this package for this is called Celery, and it is an interface to not only to this, but we use RabbitMQ. This is a distributed DAS queue. Mm-hmm. It's written in Erlang, and which is very fast, and it works really nice. So we had never real problems with it. So this is really a great software.
Now, other than a donate button, I haven't seen any way to pay you for this wonderful service. So, what's the? Obviously, you're not going to, you know, charge it for free and make it up in volume. What's your long range plans for this?
Yeah, long range plans are to make good stuff and to make the people happy. At the moment, we have such a research funding from the Austrian government, and so we are really good. And yeah, we have also this donate button, and the plan for later is maybe to make some kind of a freemium model where, let's say, a lecture. We have, for instance, we have universities which do lecture recordings, which have really many files a day. Mm-hmm. So that you pay for if you are a really heavy user, or let's say conference recordings or broadcasters. But yeah, that's not fixed yet, so we are still experimenting. And yeah, that's always a good question, how to support the development and open source development and things like that. But let's see, maybe we will find a model.
And so development, what's your development team like?
Yeah, that's a good question. So we are, at the moment, we are 5 people, which are not all in the same activity. But yeah, we have basically 1 web developer, then 2 which are more audio guys, and 1 guy who did the whole mobile app. By the way, this is also a nice thing. So he used a PhoneGap or Cordova framework where you can develop HTML5 apps, which are platform independent. And yeah, he did a really great job. And the app is also open source on GitHub. And there are many tricks inside of it, how you can really do good iPhone style apps with PhoneGap. And yeah, we are these 5 people. I am involved in all kinds of the project. Not in the mobile app, but in all other parts of the project. So we are just technicians, no business or marketing guys. So maybe we have to change that.
Well, it's probably a good thing you're on this show then, because you're going to get a lot more publicity than you probably would ever expect recently. So that's good. So how much of this is being, how much of the development is being done in the open? It sounded like you said the iPhone app is on GitHub, but what about the rest of it? What about like your website source or the processing Python scripts and stuff? Are you open sourcing those?
Yeah, the website, I mean, the website is, we could open source it, of course, but I don't know if it is so, this is very specific, of course, to our system. So it's just the Django framework. And if you have some small packages which are specific to us or which give other users a value, we, of course, open source them. The audio algorithms, we are just building a set of plugins, which, because our algorithms all run directly in Python, and also they use really a lot of libraries and machine learning data sets and everything. So it's not so easy to bundle this in an easy distributable package. But yeah, we are just at the moment, so I think it will be released next week or in 2 weeks, a set of plugins where we have core components so that everyone can use it as plugins, for instance, in Ardu or in Audacity or in other programs.
Awesome. I'd really like to plug this into other things. I think some of this, the sound reduction stuff you're doing is really sounds really fascinating. And you also, at the beginning of the show, you talked about this being sort of the first part of a larger problem of just getting content up on the web. Do you see this in your roadmap? Do you see this being a piece of that then?
Yes, we are also part of a bigger project, which is called the BotLove project, in basically initiated from Tim Pritlove, which is a German podcaster. And there are many different parts. As you said, there is the recording part or audio processing part, which are we doing. Then there is the part of how to host files and how to make a good podcasting site, like, for instance, a good WordPress plugin to show your audio, just to have a place for the podcast. And also, of course, the problem of distributing files. There's also a project called BitLove, where you can just put your podcast feed and then he will make a torrent out of it automatically and distribute your feed via BitTorrent, so that you can really publish files also if you don't have a lot of bandwidth. And yeah, there is also an HTML5 player for podcasts, which also shows all chapters and the show notes and links to your episodes and to subscribe and everything. Then there are different podcasting clients like AntennaBot, which is an open source client for Android, which also shows all the chapter marks. And yeah, there are many small projects. Maybe you can check out the site. This is botlove.org. And yeah, this is in heavy development. There is really a lot of going on because, yeah, there are this German podcasting scene is very, very intense and active, and they are always doing new stuff. So it's very interesting.
So what's your personal involvement? How did you get involved with this project, and what's your background with open source?
Yeah, I did get involved in this project actually also because of this podcaster, Tim Pritlove. He was one source of inspiration because he was always talking how difficult everything is and how long it takes him to record something and then produce a show. He has to encode all the audio files and make the audio post-processing and everything. And so I thought, okay, that's actually easy to automate. And it started with a small script and then got more and more complex with all machine learning and everything, because my background is also from the music scene. I started my involvement in a program called BioData, which is an open source audio synthesizer. And it's basically a real-time programming language where you can build all audio and video stuff. Mm-hmm. And then I was more involved into the machine learning community, also a lot with NumPy and SciPy. And basically, this is just a combination of all of these topics. So it's the perfect thing for us to do, of course.
And so what's an electronic unicorn?
Yeah. Yeah, previously I built electronic interfaces, as I said, with this Butator, which is where you can generate sound and everything. And this was one of my instruments, so electronic unicorn. It was just a potentiometer on the head where you played some sounds. And this was connected to a computer, and then you could play all sounds with the unicorn. And it was a big hit.
Very cool. Yeah, we'll have to check that out sometime when I get a chance. Or I see that you have a URL in the show notes, so we'll have to look at that. What's on the shorter range radar for the Alphonic site specifically in terms of what features you're trying to add soon?
Yeah, actually, we are just now, as I said, trying to put some packages to really make some concrete packages and open source them. A reason for this is also because we organized the Linux Audio Conference in Graz here this year in May. And not we, Alphonic, but many people here from Austria. And yeah, that's a good point to actually get all this work done. And yeah, other things are the Android version will come soon of our mobile app. And we are also developing many new algorithms. For instance, in the next few weeks, we will release a new clipping reduction algorithm, which is if you record your audio too loud and you have clipping inside of it, we will detect it and fix it. And also, de-reverberation is a new algorithm we are working on. So this means you always have this problem when you record, for instance, a lecture in a bigger room, then you have all this reverb inside of the recording. And yeah, we just developed an algorithm which is able to remove most of the reverb so you can get a clean speech again. And yeah, we also plan to implement a multi-channel feature so that you can upload audio from different speakers in separate files.
Oh.
We were playing the electronic unicorn thing in the background there.
Yeah. Okay. I was just about to say, you've got an awesome doorbell there.
Yeah.
Actually, John, why don't you go ahead and take that since we started?
Okay.
Oh, that's the studio. Yes. There we go.
Yeah, hello, I'm Georg Holzmann, and my instrument is called the Electronic Unicorn. I needed a potentiometer, which you see here. And yeah, you can, of course, put it onto a table or put it somewhere on the foot. But if you put it on the head, it's a unicorn. You see this glove, and there is on each finger a contact. And each finger is one musical voice. Then I have these four plates down here, and I can put now the fingers on the plates, then move the unicorn. I can adjust the volume of the first voice. I have more parameters on all these plates, and I can also switch between them with these two knobs. The music is a little bit like noise or electronic or experimental, but it's always hard to classify. So I'm a mixture of a technician and a musician, and therefore I build such instruments.
Was pretty fascinating there. So for those of you that weren't watching the video, if you're listening to the audio version of this show, which I know most of our audience is actually, he had a device on his head. You had a device on your head that actually was sticking out of your forehead, and you were using it as a potentiometer, and you're wearing like this metal plates on your chest. Just you're basically wearable computing doing a synthesizer. That's really sort of awesome there. Do you have other instruments like that? Is this like a hobby of yours?
Yeah, we build more similar stuff. For instance, some boxing interfaces with box hands and, yeah, some funny ideas.
Cool. Excellent. And it reminded me a little bit of watching the video. This is going to, I hope I don't annoy people who are only listening to the audio too much, but of maybe a theremin almost attached to your head. You could maybe adapt it with some kind of theremin thing as well, where you could use the field. You know, field around it to kind of make sounds as well. That's really cool. And jumping back to Orphonic seamlessly there. I was curious about, we talked about features and things that you might be looking to add. A lot of shows, mentioning no names, record in different order and then like to chop up the audio and switch it back into a new order, sections into a new order, if you like. I was wondering, with the chapters and so on, would there be any way you could maybe in future, say I want chapter 3 to be at the start and I'd like chapter 1 to be at the end and things like that, you know, and maybe tell Orphonic about that when you upload a file and mark it with chapters and then get it to kind of chop that up. Would that be feasible, or is that a bit of a far-fetched kind of feature?
Yeah, exactly. That's also what we are working on. So files in parallel, so multiple channels, and also files in a series. So if you want to have a intro or outro you always use, you can just upload it and then just record the podcast and add it to your podcast automatically. And maybe, of course, also various sections where you can upload various sections and interchange them. Yeah, lots of ideas. And let's see what we will implement.
yeah, excellent. So I was just curious as well about, I have to ask this because all the Android fans will be screaming at me if I don't. I've actually just signed up while you were talking to Randall there. I have to confess, I've just been on the website and signed up for this. And I was looking through the mobile apps and stuff, and you mentioned that you're using PhoneGap and so on, so you can do multiple yes. platforms. But I didn't see an Android version, and I searched in the market. Is there an Android version of the app, or will there be, hopefully?
Yes, there will, and hopefully very soon. next week we will make a deep work week, and hopefully we will finish the Android app next week. Let's see.
You know, with all that, when you're talking about the idea of having, like, you know, already existing files as intros and outros, or rearranging chapters and things like that, sounds like you're going to have to create some sort of, you know, domain-specific language and upload a little script file to say, okay, I want to take, you know, standard opening 14 for this and standard closing 23, and then these three things are out of order as I'm uploading them. Do you have any thoughts about what that scripting language would look like?
Yeah, that's exactly the problem. This gets complicated very soon. So at the moment, we just plan to support intros and outros and the main show. But of course, you can make it much more complex with lots of building blocks and somehow an interface to arrange all these building blocks. So we thought about that, but I think this will still take a little bit of time.
Whatever you do, please, for heaven's sake, whatever you do, don't make it XML. Please.
Of course.
Please. Of course. Actually, even like a YAML file or a JSON payload or something would probably be pretty
YAML,
good.
JSON, of course. Nothing XML. So.
Yeah, thank you. My God, we do not need one more XML file format in the world. I tell you, just if the answer is XML, you asked the wrong question. I tell you, that's really the problem these days. So we're almost out of time. We've covered a lot of stuff. I'm excited. I want to go play with this thing now because I do guest spots for a couple of different podcasts, the Small Talk podcast and the science fiction podcast. I forget the name of it now already. It's horrible. It's going to be mad at me forever. Oh, Starship Sofa. And so I think this would be really useful for me to be able to do my post-processing and just, you know, I drop it back in my Dropbox and actually upload it to the person that needs it. We've talked about a lot of things. Is there anything we've left out that you want to make sure our audience is aware of?
Well, yeah, there are so many things, but one important thing to say is, so everyone is invited to use us, and if someone has special requests or whatever, they can always contact us, so we are in very close communication with our users. That's also really great, so they give us really great feedback when some audio is not working and everything, so we can improve the algorithms. So that's really a great community.
If you wouldn't mind answering, how many audio files are you processing a day right now?
But there are a few hundreds.
Okay,
and
good.
Most of them are also very long because in Germany they tend to very long podcasts, so up to 3 or 5 hours. Yeah.
Wow.
Like cool. Linux Outlaws seems to be getting longer and longer because there's a half German on, right? Half of it is German.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're at 2 hours. When you said long, I thought 2 hours was a long podcast. 5 hours? I don't think I'd be going for that.
Indeed. Okay. And great. So that was a great answer to that. Anything else before we go?
Thanks for having us on the show. So it was really a pleasure.
Oh, no. I forgot my two official questions. What's your favorite scripting language? I better know what it is.
Let's say Python.
Yeah, okay. Right. I figured that. And favorite text editor?
Sublime Text.
Okay, something in the third column. That's fine. Can't get a win on this show. Oh, well, it's okay. Well, Georg, it's been a pleasure having you on. I'm definitely going to go ahead and play with this some more and use it to be post-processing my audio. Thank you for providing the service.
Thank you also.
Very good. There we go. That was Georg Holtzman. What's his name? Holtzman. Georg Holtzman talking to us about his team producing the Afonic.com website and providing a very interesting service. What do you think, Dan?
Yeah, I thought, well, as you'd expect, I was absolutely in love with this as soon as I heard about it, really. And I wasn't joking. I have actually signed up. I was doing that on my other monitor there. I was quickly typing away as you were talking there, signing up for the web service. I'm really keen to see where this goes. I spend half my life editing audio, and it could make a massive difference. It sounds like they're doing really, really cool things, and government-funded as well. Who knew? That's a great project there.
Yeah, the Austrian government. That's so there's definitely some good things coming to the Austrian government being able to fund this. Or is the German government funding this, even though he's in Austria? I never did quite get that clear. Doesn't matter. Somebody's funding it. That's the important part. And we covered a lot of this in the show, but just the difficulty, even I have, you know, I'm staring at an audio editor and I'm seeing these waveforms go up and down in my audio editor, and I'm trying to like get this piece of audio to sound like the piece that it's adjacent to when they were recorded on different days, and there's different background tone, and it's a mess. And so if I could just say, screw it, we'll give it to some service and let them process it and drop it back in my Dropbox in 5 minutes or so, this is going to be a time saver for me. If I was doing my Libsyn podcast again, this is great that they now added Libsyn output format, output location. It's definitely something I encourage our audience to go take a look at least if you're doing anything related to audio or podcasting or, music or anything like that. I think this is probably pretty handy. I know I'm listening to a bunch of podcasts that really could stand going through this. So I'm going to be actually making a couple of comments to the people I listen to say, hey, there's a new service in town. Go use it.
Yeah. I think it'll make a great big difference to a lot of people. And I think it's really fascinating the way they're developing it as well. And of course, we love the fact that it's open source and they're doing development in the open as well and consulting with users, which is great. It's great to hear projects who actually listen to their users. And they've got great plans as well for the future. I can't wait for a version where I was saying I can tell it to put, a certain section at the end and a certain section at the start and so on.
Yep.
That would basically solve a lot of my problems, I think.
Great. Very cool. Well, speaking of the future, there's my awkward transition for the week. Let's look at what's coming up on Floss Weekly. We have Tapper next week, which is a test infrastructure originally developed at AMD, allowing us to test various software platforms. Basically, I think it lets you define like not only the software you want to test and the way you test it, but also the image you want to run it on. So it actually launches an image from scratch and boots it up using something like, I think, Puppet or whatever to configure it. And then you actually do your test. So it's a great way for doing bare metal testing. Really awesome for that. Media Goblin coming up after that, which is a media publishing platform that anyone can run, which basically lets you create your own Flickr or YouTube or whatever. Zotonic, which is a Erlang-based web framework and content management system. CakePHP, which was we had them on a while or wanted to have them on a while back. We had to move them out. That's also a web framework, a very popular web framework, I must add. When I pushed out that I was actually going to put these guys on the show, I got a lot of feedback. Oh, we use CakePHP over here. Poodle, which is a web-based translation framework to allow you to have your program be more localized and internationalized. And then one I'm really looking forward to, the Dart language I developed at Google for their Chrome browser, a more advanced version of JavaScript. So it's actually compilable down to JavaScript, but having actual classes and exception management and things like that that JavaScript is somewhat lacking in. Finally, rounding out Q1 is Pinto, which is a localized CPAN. We're getting our friend Jeremy Thalheimer, who talked to us about ProCritic about a year and a half ago. He has this new thing called Pinto and wanted to bring him back to talk about that. We got more slots opening up soon for Q2. You can go to twit.tv/floss to look for the link to our big spreadsheet that talks about all the people coming up. If you have a project that is not on that list, please do not email me. Email the project leader and tell him to email him or her. Sorry, let's be put it correct there. To email me at merlin@stonehenge.com to tell me what's going on about that project and why they should be on Floss Weekly. You can follow us on Floss Weekly at Google Plus or at Floss Weekly on both Identica and Twitter. As we took a couple questions from the live chat room this time, we tape at 8:30 a.m. Pacific time on Wednesdays, unless otherwise noted. And you can go to live.twit.tv and both watch us behind the scenes, see how many flubs we make, see many times they have to reconnect to me on Skype sometimes, and all the other things behind the scenes. You can follow me personally, Merlin, M-E-R-L-Y-N. I am on Twitter and Identica, but most of the time I'm doing all my postings now on Google+. So that's that would be Randall L. Schwartz on there. And I think I have about 20,000 Google Plus followers now, which is really fun because I get a lot of good dialogue going on. Some of the things I talk about on Google Plus is, in fact, my ongoing weight loss and health kick that I'm on. I'm currently at 176 this week, which is 39 pounds that I've lost in 5 months just using low-carb, high-fat, ketogenic diet, same thing that Steve Gibson recommended back a while. That's not where I started from. I started from my friend Andy, but I am on this. My blood pressure has stabilized. I've gone from type 2 hypertension all the way down to normal without meds. So I'm very excited about that. I'm going to lose another 10 pounds or so and then call it good. That's probably all I want to plug for right now. Coming up in a couple weeks, I won't be on this show, but the show will go on. We have our wonderful rotating panel of co-hosts is picking up the shows while I'm on in South America. I'm going to the Galapagos Islands for a few days, 5 days actually. Then I'm also going on a 14-day cruise around South America, which should be a lot of fun. More on that as we get closer to that. That's all the plugging I want to do. Dan, what's going on with you?
Yeah, I want to mention very quickly something that I mentioned last time, which is our Linux Outlaws live show that's coming up. I do a weekly podcast with my German co-host, who you mentioned before. It's all about open source, about Linux, as the title would suggest, but other things as well, other open source topics. And we're coming up to our 300th episode. We started in 2007, which is scary to think about now. And for the 300th episode, we thought we should do something a little bit different, a little bit special. So we're doing a show, a live show in front of an audience, hopefully, if an audience turns up. So that's where you guys come in. It's in Liverpool in the UK, and it's on the 17th of February, which is a Sunday. And it's going to be in the early evening. It's about 5 o'clock. So you can come down and spend the afternoon with us and then have a nice time in the stay in the bar, have something to eat and so on, and catch the live show, like a 2-hour live show. And it's £5, five of the Queen's British pounds is the price. So you can find out, all the information about that, and you can buy tickets and so on through Eventbrite. If you search for Linux Outlaws Live, I've just tried it in Google. It came up second for me, although they're using those search bubbles now. So I hope that works the same for everyone. Or you can just go to sixgun.org/lol. And we did only call it Linux Outlaws Live, so we could use that acronym. I'll admit that. LOL, obviously. But if you want to find out anything else about what I'm doing, yeah, the address is on the screen there. You can find my Twitter accounts and Facebook and Google Plus and all those kind of things. I'm sad to say I don't quite have 20,000 followers on Google Plus. So if you want to jump on and help me out, that would be good. But I don't think I'll be catching Randall anytime soon. So head to danlynch.org and you can find the blog and all the other stuff on there.
Very good. And the good thing it's not like 5 pounds weight, because I'm having less and less of those every week. So
I have to confess, when you said I'm on 176, I thought, I'm sure we've done more shows than that. It says 239 on my Floss Weekly lineup.
Yeah. Oh, it should say 240. Why are you looking at 239?
Sorry. This is because we're recording 240.
Yeah, okay, awesome. Okay, cool. Great. Well, thanks, Dan, for letting us know where you're going to be. And let's see, do I have everything else in my notes I'm supposed to cover right now? I don't think so. So we'll see you again next week on Floss Weekly.